You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Now on today's show, we are going to discuss James McCann's first season with the Mets from all angles. The first segment, I want to talk about my preseason expectations for James McCann, why I wasn't the biggest fan of the signing when the Mets initially agreed to that $40.6 million deal over 4 years. In the second segment, I'll dive into the numbers this season and talk about why James McCann was not as successful this year as he was in his previous two seasons with the Chicago White Sox. And then lastly, in the final segment, I want to talk about James McCann and Tomas Nido. Nido was the superior defensive catcher this year. And moving forward, how should they split playing time? As of course, we're also looking towards the even more exciting future with Francisco Alvarez behind the plate. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at justbaseball.com. So James McCann signs with the Mets this offseason, the clear number two starting catcher on the market, maybe the only other starting catcher on the market besides JT Realmuto. At the time, you may recall, I said that the signing was not my favorite, and the biggest problem I had with the deal was simply the fact that it was 4 years. At $10 million a year for a starting catcher, that is a fine price. That's a fair price. But when it comes to the length of the contract and what the Mets were paying him off of, I just had my concerns. And it's funny to have this conversation right now about what a player is worth in free agency, because I just had a thread that I tweeted out that I've gotten some comments back and forth with on Twitter, where I was talking about Marcus Stroman and what he's worth in free agency and this idea that he's worth every single penny that his market dictates he receives. And I still believe that James McCann was worth a $40.6 million contract because he was able to put together two great seasons leading into his contract year. And he proved himself to be a catcher worthy of potentially getting a starting opportunity over a long-term deal. It happens to be with the Mets. Hats off to him. But now you look at his production this year, and there's certainly concerns about what he can do moving forward. So you go and you look at what happened, what led to him getting this contract. In 2019, James McCann was an all-star. Before that, he was a catcher for the Tigers that got non-tendered following the 2018 season. James McCann's talked about that. Getting non-tendered was a real motivator for him. Comes back 2019, is an all-star with the White Sox at .273 with a .328 on-base percentage and a .460 slugging percentage, 18 home runs and 60 RBIs in 118 games. Talk about his WRC+, which again is weighted runs created plus, a stat that measures hitters based on a league average of 100. It was 108, above average, not incredible, but a very good offensive season for a catcher who's always been regarded for his defense and his ability to command a pitching staff with his leadership. The White Sox from there respond after his all-star season by signing Yasmani Grandal, which to me was always a red flag. Going into 2020, after his all-star campaign, the team that had him went and got a big-time starting catcher in free agency. You go to the 2020 season, though, doesn't faze him. 60-game sample, splits time with Grandal, puts up great numbers, right? His season in 2020 hit .289, .360 on base, .536 slugging, WRC plus of 142. That is elite, especially for a catcher. 7 home runs in 30 games. But you're also talking about a sample where he only played 31 games and he posted the best frame rates of his career as well. But again, everything was that condensed sample. And that concerned me, especially when you dove into his numbers in 2019. Because while he was great, he was really great before the All-Star break and after, not so much. In 2019, James McCann hit .316 with a .371 on base percentage and a .502 slugging percentage in the first half. That was what got him that all-star nod. After that, he did still hit 9 home runs in the second half, which is solid, but he hit 226 with a 281 on base and a 413 slugging. So James McCann got paid off of a 63-game sample from the first half of 2019 and a 31-game sample from the 60-game season. And that is what concerned me going into this year. That's why I did not love the signing. Now, James McCann still provides great value defensively. As I said, as a leader, he is great as a pitch caller. I think pitching staffs respond to him very well. But the reason why I was always a little bit against this signing was because Tomas Nito simply does all of those defensive things better than James McCann at a fraction of the cost. And so I thought the Mets should have gone a different route, just gotten someone to split some time with Tomas Nito and just swallow the fact that you might not get the most offense, but still Nito's going to give you elite production behind the plate. At the end of the day, James McCann's career slash line, which did get pulled down a bit after this down year, but for his career, he's a 246 hitter with a 299 on base percentage and a 387 slugging percentage. Tomas Nito, a better defensive catcher, might not produce quite to that level, but certainly close to that. So if James McCann is going to continue to get more playing time than Tomas Nito next year, he's got to swing the bat. And that's what I want to talk about just a bit. I want to talk about his season this year offensively, where things slipped from where he was as an elite offensive performer in his 2 years with the Chicago White Sox. This episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. Yes, you can finally join in on the conversation you listen to here every day. You'll find fans just like you on Green Room for watch parties, which we did throughout the 2021 season, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to big news or rumors. Go download the free Spotify Green Room app now, which is currently available on all devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, join the MLB group for the latest league updates, and follow me at Finkelstein Ryan, and you'll be notified when my room goes live. I know you don't want to miss it. I will be live at certain points throughout the offseason. I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts about the Mets. I'll see you there. Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. There really is no way to sugarcoat it. James McCann was not a good offensive player this season. He hit 232, 294 on base, 349 slugging, 643 OPS. You look at his season overall, only 10 home runs and 412 plate appearances, only 23 extra base hits, which was the least he had had since 2016 when he had 22. There's an argument this was one of, if not the worst, offensive seasons of his career. Just not the player he was in Chicago. You got the Tigers version of James McCann. And I don't know if that was the pressure of living up to a contract, if that was because he was part of an offense that continued to struggle with Chicago. He was part of teams that seemed to produce a little bit more offensively. And when you are not expected to hit fourth at times, which James McCann had to do in early parts of the season when the entire lineup was hurt, maybe that allows you to have a little less pressure and you can just go out and perform. And also, if you think about a guy that went from his first organization, where he just got non-tender with Detroit, goes to Chicago, where he's just fighting for his big league life at that point, maybe you get a different version of James McCann than the one that now has made it, right? And I'm not saying that he would have had fat cat syndrome and not worked. That's not the type of guy I think James McCann is. But what I'm more saying is that once you've made it and you've now created expectations, there's pressure to live up to those expectations, where maybe the last 2 years, it was a little bit more free and easy. It was, yeah, everyone's against me, but no one's believing in me. Let me go out and prove it. Now there's too many people who have expectations of believing in me, and I fail to meet them. I don't know if that could be the psychology behind it or what it is, but that's certainly something that you could consider. If you dive into the numbers and the reasons why this guy wasn't successful, a great part of it could have been detected from the eye test. He was killing a lot of snails, right? He was hitting the ball into the ground all the time, grounding into double plays, just not looking comfortable, not hitting line drives, not really driving the ball into gaps with authority, but instead hitting a lot of ground balls to shortstops. I mean, that was what James McCann's season was. If you look at the numbers, obviously it backs that up. This year, his ground ball rate was over 50% at 51.5. The best year of his career in 2019, he still hit the ball on the ground a lot at 44.4%. So there's a jump there. But he also hit the ball harder that year. His hard hit percentage that season, where he hit the ball 95 miles per hour or harder when it comes to the exit velo, was 43.2. You look at this season, 40.7. You look at the aberration of a shortened 60-game schedule where he only played the 31 games in 2020. His hard hit percentage was 47.8. Now, that's basically a two-month hot streak, right? So obviously those numbers are a little skewed, but again, it shows you the difference between other years and this year, where James McCann was, for whatever reason, not generating that solid contact. James McCann's barrel percentage this past season was lower than in 2019, his best year. This year is at 6.1. In 2019, it was 7.9. If you try to go through all the numbers, plate discipline, very similar. Hitting the ball to all fields, very similar. 37.6% pull percentage this year was literally identical to the number he put up in his best season in 2019. Where the clear problem came from this year is that James McCann, similar to Jeff McNeil, was not barreling up baseballs and not hitting the ball as hard as he did in years past. One great stat you can look at for James McCann that kind of tells the story of his season is expected slugging percentage. And this is a stat that is formulated using exit velocity and launch angle and on certain batted ball events, sprint speed, to detect what a player's slugging percentage should be. Expected slugging percentage, according to Baseball Savant, is more indicative of a player's skill than regular slugging percentage, as expected slugging percentage removes defense from the equation. Hitters and likewise pitchers are able to influence exit velocity and launch angle, but do not have control on what happens once that bat and ball is put into play. That's their explanation of what the stat is. So this is supposed to be the clearest measurement of what a player should be slugging during a season. So in 2019, again, when James McCann was at his best over a full year, his expected slugging percentage on fastballs was 441. You look at what happened in 2020, that jumped up a bit to 468. This year, his expected slugging percentage against fastballs was 368, a 100-point drop-off from what it was in the shortened season. You go to breaking pitches. In 2019, expected slugging percentage of 451. Then it was 453 in 2020. This year, all the way down to 284. When it comes to just off-speed pitches in general, James McCann, 457 expected slugging percentage in 2019, 438 in 2020, 307 this year. Numbers down across the board. Hopefully, whatever hitting coach comes in, helps coach these guys up, can help James McCann and Jeff McNeil and some of these other batters next season be able to barrel up baseballs again and hit for some power, because you need that to have a successful functional lineup. But for James McCann personally, and when it comes to the Mets catching situation moving forward, if he's not hitting with power, if he's not hitting for some average, if he's not producing head and shoulders over Tomas Nito, he should not be playing over Tomas Nito, because Tomas Nito is arguably a top two, top three, maybe even the best defensive catcher in baseball, depending on what metrics you like. And, you know, as much as I can talk about how much James McCann was an upgrade over Wilson Ramos defensively, and he was absolutely, he could actually make a tag at home plate. He was a better leader for the pitching staff. He was a far better pitch framer than Ramos was. Nito does all those things better. And so that is the problem you run into with James McCann and this contract. I've said it before in past shows. I said it, I believe, last offseason heading into the year, that Tomas Nito is the backup catcher of the future for the Mets. It is in some ways a backhanded compliment, but I think when you look towards a future with Francisco Alvarez in that backstop, Nito's kind of the perfect pairing with him, because Nito would be a guy that could catch in the late innings of tight games. There's a lot of things the Mets could do. So what I want to do is I want to talk about that prospect in the next segment. I want to talk about Patrick Mazika as well and how James McCann really factors into the future of the Mets when it comes to the catcher position. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors that there really is something for everyone? Whether it's the coconut bar, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, German chocolate, salted caramel, even my personal favorite, cookies and cream. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you'll get two of each and you can see which ones you like best. These really are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. Built Bars come low in calories, low in sugar, but they're high in protein and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So as I was going through the numbers on James McCann, I was looking at his pitch framing, and he's 34th in baseball this year. Not bad, you know, 47.9% strike rate. Could certainly be better, but compared to Wilson Ramos in the past, huge upgrade, right? Then you look at the top of the leaderboard. Who is number one in pitch framing in baseball? None other than Tomas Nito. So until we're getting an automated strike zone, Tomas Nito brings incredible value to the pitching staff. His strike rate this year for Nito, 53.5%, which again, best mark in baseball. You talk about the zones, right? You have the different quadrants of the plate. Zone 16, which is if you're looking at a border around the strike zone, these are how they get these pitch framing numbers. What strikes you get called in those zones, you know, the top left corner of the strike zone, top right, you know, just the sides, you know, up, down. How do you frame your pitches? How many strike calls do you get? So zone 16 is essentially the outside part of the plate to a right-handed batter, the inside part of the plate to a left-handed batter. For Nito, that's where he's catching with his glove side and pulling it back when he's framing it. On that zone, in zone 16, this year, Tomas Nito got 80% of the calls. So if you're Marcus Stroman working against a right-handed lineup and you're dotting those sinkers on the outside corner, and you're even going a little bit outside of the strike zone so that they can't reach those pitches, and Nito's pulling them back in, getting strike calls, that's going to make you a lot more effective. And we saw that with pitchers up and down the Mets rotation and in their bullpen when Nito's behind the plate. He is an exceptional receiver. So if you have Nito back there, that's going to impact the game a lot more than four at-bats. And I think that's where the game is generally going. We see a team like the Rays where Mike Zunino is a catcher that is now the prototypical guy that you might want, because what does he do? He's not the best hitter, but he hits some home runs and he's a good defensive catcher. And that's what you want. So Tomas Nito, maybe he won't ever be that one part of it. Maybe he'll never have the power. Maybe he never will produce it offensively. We've seen flashes. We haven't seen him put it together for a long enough stretch to trust that he can be a starter. Defensively, he's amazing. And I think moving forward, when you have the knowledge that you have Francisco Alvarez, whose bat is going to continue to soar faster than his glove, to pair those two together is really something that I think the Mets should be considering even now, that future, and trying to secure that. Nito is never going to be that expensive. So the idea of keeping him around long-term as the quote-unquote backup catcher of the future, to me, it makes so much sense. And I could even see a possibility down the road where a three catcher backstop is what you want with those two guys, because I think you might want the ability to DH Francisco Alvarez and to allow Tomas Nito to catch when you get to that point where you have a universal DH. You might want to be able to pull Alvarez in the seventh inning when you have a 3-1 lead, so that Nito can catch those final couple of innings, and I have a third catcher that just opens up that flexibility. Is James McCann that guy at $10 million? I don't know, because I think the perfect complement is almost someone that's also on the roster in Patrick Mazika, that type of a player profile. Now, Mazika has to prove that he can do it at the big league level. He's a guy that's hit for power, has been more of a hitter or a bat first catcher than a glove first catcher in the minors. If he can produce and hit with some pop from that left side, it's kind of the perfect complement to the other two guys. If not Mazika, because he never does perform at the big league level, You can find a catcher like that on a minor league deal most years, a catcher that can give you some pop from the left side, that can be on your bench, that can be useful as a pinch hitter, but also can just be that third catcher so you can utilize the other two guys. I think James McCann, if he does not hit this year, and even if he does, there is a real potential that he gets traded before the end of this four-year contract. Because I can even see a situation where you would look and maybe you would trade a J.D. Davis and a James McCann, where you might not get a big prospect return, but J.D. Davis allows you to get off of the McCann contract and just clear up that space. Because what you don't necessarily want is for James McCann to be a $10 million third catcher. And what you also don't want is for you to give up a Tomas Nito, who would be cheaper and a better complement to Alvarez, simply because James McCann's money is on the books. As much as you can say it's a big contract, it's really not that crazy. Now it's a three-year deal for, what, $30 million. That's not crazy. If he plays out the next season as Alvarez is developing, you're talking about 2 years left on that deal. And really at that point, it wouldn't be the toughest contract to move, especially for a team that wants a leader that can catch the way James McCann can. And you know what? Let me just pull up really quick before we close the breakdown of that contract. I'm not sure if it is evenly divided year over year when it comes to the average salary. Oh, wow, it is backloaded. So that's going to make it tougher to move. I didn't realize it was backloaded. $8 million on the first 2 years of the deal with a $150,000 signing bonus. Or, well, really, it was a $600,000 signing bonus split over the 4 years. Final 2 years of the deal, he will be getting $12 million a year. That is going to be a little bit tougher to move, but I still think it's not an albatross type of a contract you can't move off of. Again, I just think the future of the Mets is Nito and Alvarez behind the backstop. But for now, I think going into next season, there is enough hope that James McCann can rediscover what he had in Chicago, produce a little bit, and those two guys splitting time, it's really not a problem I see going into this offseason. I think your catching situation, for now, you're in pretty good hands because at least both of them are going to provide you a solid defensive catcher for your pitching staff. And to me, that's still the more important thing out of that position, unless you get the elite offensive performer like a Francisco Alvarez who's coming down the pipeline. Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. On tomorrow's show, I should have Pat Ragazzo, Mets beat writer. We're going to talk a lot about the Marcus Stroman situation heading into free agency. What should the Mets do there? What can Stroman command? So make sure you tune into that. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB with Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call him Sully, as he has you covered for everything going on with playoff baseball this October.